now, the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We have a jam-packed show today, in one of those days where we have a guest that may drop in. Jimmy Vaccaro going to be on board, South Point Casino Resort, sports marketing director. We're going to talk about the view from Vegas on the Super Bowl with the 49ers and the Chiefs. We will have Doug Howler with us today, ASU insider for The Athletic, because Todd Graham is back in coaching. Some of you yesterday were losing your minds over Todd Graham coming back into the coaching space with the see, ASU shouldn't have let Todd Graham go. I told you, Brad, I told you, and they made a mistake, and I'm never buying my tickets again. I'm like, really? Really? Back away, man. And we've got a couple other things we're working on, too. So very much looking forward to today's show. We're brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most, and that is with life insurance. I don't know the last time you guys checked your life insurance policy. I'm meeting with someone later today who reached out and said, I know that you do life insurance. I have some things that are going on in my world in a very good space. I'm in my mid-30s. Things are taking off. I've got a family. I've got some kids, but I have not taken care of my life insurance. I have my license. Got my license because I believe in what Sagicor is all about. Sagicor Now. Go to Sagicor Now for yourself, for your own peace of mind. And log on, get your free quote. That's at Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And that is with Sagicor. All right, Jimmy Vaccaro here in a few minutes. I'm torn between the Fitz story and the Graham story because I know that they're 24 hours outside of the news cycle. The Suns were just awful last night, again, defensively. Eric, did you watch that? Did you see any of...
No, I did not.
You didn't miss anything?
No, I was watching Zion, of course. Come on.
Oh, Zion played?
I think he did. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. Did somebody alert the media that Zion was playing?
The four-letter word did hours upon hours of pregame coverage, and then, of course, I get in today, and the talking heads this morning are just talking about, is he a bust? Is he going to be as good as everyone thinks he is? It's been one game, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah.
But who's behind you today in your shot?
Harris.
And Harris is?
Harris just appeared.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just showed up.
Is he our new employee or what?
I don't know. I don't do the hiring or firing. So
I see.
That's kind of your job. So
he is. He's actually shadowing us. He's out here from Nashville as a friend of the professor, Paula Bovin. So it's nice to have Harris here on board. Here's the thing, Eric. One other thing, and then I'll get into my rant on this. So you did watch Zion.
Of course. Why would I watch the Suns? I flipped the game over. They were down 25 points at home to the Pacers. I was like, nope. Goodbye.
And TJ Warren is leading the Indiana attack, just crushing them.
He's had a good year.
So Zion plays 18 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And people today and last night were mad that Alvin Gentry, who we both know, who we both respect, that Alvin Gentry didn't use him right. And I don't get this. I understand fans were chanting for Zion to come back because he went crazy
in
that stretch.
Not didn't use him right, didn't play him more.
That was not using him right. They wanted him to play more.
But it's not like he...
They wanted him to play.
They wanted him to play more. It wasn't like he was playing point guard last night.
Are we cutting hairs here?
No.
I don't have any hairs to cut.
We split hairs.
I don't have any.
But I understand what you're saying. But it's like he was on a pitch count. It's fine. Like, it's okay. It's one game. And he looked really rusty at the beginning of the game. He had like five turnovers in the first half.
He was dripping. I didn't see much. But when I did see, it looked like he was just sweating profusely because he's not in game shape yet.
No.
You can go through all the practices you want. You're not in game shape.
It's exciting, though. He's ridiculously talented.
He is. No.
Good. Such a good passer. Such a good feel. Ugh.
I think I'm going to watch a little bit more. I got into Syracuse Notre Dame for a bit. I wanted to watch some college hoops last night. And I watched some of that. And then the Suns game the fact that Larry was... Finally, this whole Larry Fitzgerald thing started last May. We did a story on it last May. The pictures were out there last May. We have pictures of him and Sarver sitting together at Tucson 2 years ago.
And Fitz has been going to Suns games for as long as he's been in Arizona. So
I dropped Charles a text yesterday and said, what do you think? And he said, hey, you know, Fitz is great. It's great to have him at Suns games. I mean, there's nobody that can dispute that this is a positive for the Suns. But is he Michael Jordan part two? That's who people compare athletes who come into the sports space. And in my world, I don't see that. I don't see. I'm wondering how it works with Larry Fitzgerald now owns a portion of the Suns, and Michael Bidwell sees him walking around the facility.
Yeah. Well, when he retires in 6 years, we'll have a better idea as 12 years. To what his role will be with the Suns.
15 but. Years. Do you think that he automatically attracts players? I don't.
No.
I think people that go that route, that think that all of a sudden guys are going to come here, there's a deal about where does the decimal point fall on the check. That's the first metric. And then the next metric is where does the decimal point fall on the check. And then there's a third metric, and that's where does the decimal point fall on the check. And somewhere around there is who is the general manager and who are the other players and who is the coach. But where does the decimal point fall on the check? That's it. That's all I can see.
It's funny how like 5 days ago people were kind of optimistic, like, oh, the Suns, they're only two out of the eighth spot. And then 2 games later, a close loss to the Spurs, and then just a
That game was bad.
Complete home drubbing to the Pacers. The Pacers are a fine
Pacers
team.
Are good.
Yeah, they're a good team, but really to lose by 20-some-odd points at home on a Wednesday night is to the Pacers
well,
is not
it's a bad
the best
week.
Look.
It's a bad week because Memphis and San Antonio, the next game is San Antonio again.
And, yeah, then and San Antonio beat the Pels last night.
And then they have Memphis, and those are two teams, the very two teams that are in front of them for the eighth playoff spot. And so you jerk around in the game the other night against the Spurs where Ricky Rubio paints the chip or chips the paint off of the rim, and he can't get a free throw to finish the game. So, you know, I feel like it's been a bad week for the Suns, but Fitz coming on board as a minority owner, they can use that. I am sure that he's not somebody that's just going to sit off the side and never show up. I am sure that he is somebody that behind the scenes will work very hard and diligently to get it done. The Suns have made more good moves than bad moves in the last year. Okay? And I shouldn't even go that far. In the last 10 months, they've made more good moves than bad moves. Because they had to figure out what to do on their coaching search. They had to figure out what to do on their general manager search. They had to figure out what to do on titles. They had to figure out a lot of things. And so I'd say on a player personnel front, you know, they've had some struggles. It's things that look good on the surface. Now you look at them and say the Kelly Oubre contract, just wondering out loud with Mikal Bridges' emergence. The Ricky Rubio signing was solid. However, is he a one-year guy here? You know, I'm interested to see Nico Mannion this week. And that's the ASU game on Saturday night. I know Eric is going to go shoot it. I'm going to be there to see Nico Mannion in person for what will probably most likely, I would say 99% be his only college game in Tempe will be this Saturday night. And I don't know what the ticket count is. I don't care what the ticket count is. I just know that if you were to be of a college basketball fan's mind, you should be at the game on Saturday night to see U of A against ASU. ASU feels like a team that just has a bunch of pieces that if one or two guys don't play well, they're going to struggle. And those one or two guys are Rob Edwards and Remy Martin. If those two guys struggle in a game, it is what it is. U of A, on the other hand, if Nico struggles, it doesn't mean that their bigs inside can't figure it out because there's so many of them. So I'm very much looking forward to that game. Todd Graham. So I'm going to talk to Doug Haller about Todd Graham. Coach Graham gets back into the college football game, takes the Hawaii job. If you can win at Hawaii, you're there 3-4 years. Todd Graham got away from the game, should have got away from the game. Had some people that told me he needed to figure some things out in the way that he handled himself as a coach. And he did. And he even considered getting out of coaching and going into ministry. This was as of like 2 months ago and in down in Texas. And so the people that are surprised that Todd Graham jumped back into it, I think he has a pretty compelling story that he can tell people. If you are a Pittsburgh Panther fan or half of the ASU population, you don't want anything to do with Todd Graham. But I will tell you that from, when was it, Tuesday night when that story first broke and I did a pop-up podcast on it, to where we are today, there are still a number of people that feel like Todd Graham was done wrong by Ray Anderson and the Arizona State Athletic Administration. that Todd Graham did a terrific job, that Todd Graham should still be the head coach. And I would say, no, they did the absolute right thing by removing him. I think the program is in better shape today with Ray at the helm and Herm at the helm than it was with Todd Graham at the end. And we'll get into that with Doug Howell. And he may disagree with me. All right. Take a break here. On the other side, Jimmy Vaccaro, South Point Casino Resort Sports Marketing Director. We weigh in on the Super Bowl, get Jimmy's view from Vegas. That is next. And now let's turn our attention to the view from Vegas. Jimmy Vaccaro, South Point Casino Resort Sports Marketing Director. All of you across Arizona are going to be heading up, and New Mexico, are going to be heading up to Vegas. You need to get to Vegas to put down your bets and bobs on the game, and you need to get to the South Point Casino and see Jimmy Vaccaro. And Jimmy, right off the top, let's get into this. Super Bowl odds right now, currently, what do they look like?
Good talking to you, my friend, and a quick rundown. Here we go. We opened the Chiefs as a one-point favorite, got as high as 1.5. A lot of money on San Francisco, went down as low as pick, and now we're back to Chiefs minus 1. And the total's been going crazy everywhere with everybody betting the over. We opened at 52, we're at 54.5, and we see that everywhere, kid. And real quick, I mean, it's a new time, a new place, and people, the youngsters are getting tired of Brady and Rodgers and Breeze. The millennials are falling in love with all these young quarterbacks, which I perfectly tell you about this. It would be the highest handled Super Bowl we've ever did. I've never seen as much excitement, and we still got about 8 or 9 days to go.
That's amazing. Why so much coming in on the over from your view on this deal? And what's it look like? Like 80% of the bets, 90% of the bets on the over? What's it look like?
Right now, 75%, and it's all on the city. It runs under 30 points. And that, with that, obviously, you just need a regular game from the 49ers. But it's going to be interesting. But right now, it's all over money, and it's all over everywhere. I would suspect what you would consider the sharp people, the people who look for a little bit of value, that they'll buy it back if we get to 55.5. But right now, 70% of all the tickets with the total are over, and every parlay is, no matter which side, they have the over connected with that also, my friend.
How about Jimmy, the biggest bets so far you've seen? Last week when we were together, you said someone dropped 44K. They ended up eating that. What have you seen so far? Anything big?
Yeah, well, so far from us, we consider one big bet. We took a $55,000 bet on San Francisco at plus 05 on the money line. Those big plays will start to come in probably next Tuesday or Wednesday. But for us, and I've heard also around town that there's been similar bets like that. But for us right now, the biggest bet, $55,000, and make room for a lot of other tickets, kid, because I think we'll start to see a lot of six-figure teams coming in here starting next week.
Before I get you out of here, Jimmy Vaccaro with us, South Point Casino Resort, Sports Marketing Director, South Point Casino. That's the place to be for the Super Bowl. Two-part question here. And the idea of what it is that you have going on at South Point, one. And two, for people that have never bet Super Bowl, you addressed it earlier, Jimmy, you're going to have a lot of newbies coming in, a lot of millennials coming in. They may not know their way around. What advice would you give them?
Well, I've been telling them this for a long time, and it seems to hold true. A lot of people are doing exactly what I try to tell them, and every other sports book director is telling them also. Come early. Don't wait, you know, in line 10 or 15 people deep. Then get to the front of the line and say, geez, I've never done this before. Well, that stops everything. So what you want to do is come early. If it's not busy, speak to a supervisor. Pick up a sheet and go have breakfast or lunch with your favorite person you're with and look at it closely. It's not as daunting as it seems to be if you just take your time and look at the sheet. But please, don't wait in line for 20 minutes and say, when you get to the front of the line, I'm new at this stuff, help me out. Well, then the writer goes crazy and everybody behind you goes crazy. But you know what, my friend? It's been growing so popular with sports betting. A lot of people are more indoctrinated this far in than I've ever seen before. In other words, we're getting a lot of less people saying, I don't know exactly what I'm doing, because every sports show covers it. Everybody in the world talks about it. Every sports media guide is connected to it. So have fun. Come early. Don't get crazy. Bet your $50 or $100. Bet some proposition bets and have a great time. I tell you what, forget about going to the game. Come to Nevada, come to Las Vegas, and you know what, my friend? You'll be quite satisfied.
No, I know about that for sure. Stay well, Jimmy. Thanks, as always.
All right, buddy.
It's Jimmy Vaccaro there. Well, he's got some pop in him today. He's Jimmy's there's times where I think through the years where we've had Jimmy on and you could just kind of feel the, yeah, this game's going to be okay. Because it is a couple of teams that we've looked at and said here the last few weeks that, you know, Kansas City's really interesting. The 49ers, Peter King was telling us earlier this week, do they really trust Jimmy Garoppolo to go out on the field and do something? Or if the game is tied with 2 minutes to go, or they're down one and they're out of timeouts, do they trust, the 49ers trust Jimmy Garoppolo to push them down the field? It's going to be fascinating to see. And I think all those angles are really good. Of course, here next week, it's the Open. It's the only place in the country that will draw 500,000 fans to 750,000 people on a golf course the week of the Super Bowl. We're right in the middle of it. Could you imagine if they had this event in Vegas at the same time? I don't want to take away from what's going on at TPC Scottsdale, but next week we're going to have fun. It's going to be busy. It'll be great. All right, U of A, ASU, Todd Graham. Where's Herm Edwards leading and heading and all this stuff with his roster? From Doug Haller at The Athletic. That's next. Stay with us. One of the many, many, many things I like about doing this show is we get to talk to Hall of Famers. We've talked to Eric. Help me out here on Hall of Famers that we've talked to through the years. I talked to Charles Barkley yesterday about this Fitz story. Peter King's in the Hall of Fame, right? Michael Fabiano's in the Hall of Fame. Dave Pasch is in the Hall of Fame for the National Sports Media Association. Paul Coro's in that Hall of Fame, from my understanding. And I think our next guest is probably our latest and greatest Hall of Famer to roll in, and that's Doug Haller. ASU insider for The Athletic. You're laughing, but look, you're in the National Sports Media Association 2020 Hall of Fame class. All you're supposed to say is, thank you, let's talk Todd Graham, Herm Edwards, or ASU U of A. It's a compliment. I try to say
that. Well, I appreciate that, Brad. I will say probably the only time I've been in a Hall of Fame is when I have visited certain museums, but I do appreciate that, and I am, you know, proud to be recognized in the way that I was. So, yeah, it's great.
Okay, how'd you find out about this? Do they call you? Do they text you?
No, they call. Dave Gorin is his name. He's the head of the organization, and
yeah,
he calls from North Carolina. So the phone rang one day, and the Winston-Salem number came up. So I wasn't sure who it was. And sometimes, you know, when you don't recognize a number, you don't even pick it up. But I did, and you know, he told me the news, and it was really good. I'm actually the Sports Writer of the Year in Arizona. I'm sharing that with Caitlin Schmidt down in Tucson at the Daily Star. So she's very talented and does a good job. So
yeah,
it was it's good good recognition, and you know, it's always nice when you know people you know look at your work and give you something like this.
Yeah. Did you cry?
I did not cry.
Did your family cry? Did they cheer?
I did like a Cal Ripken circle around the living room, you know, high five with all my kids. You know, my kids, they're like, what, huh, what? They look up from their phones. They don't care. But that's how it goes these days.
Now, so you go back to North Carolina for a big ceremony, right? North Carolina or South Carolina? Where do you go?
It's North Carolina.
Yeah,
I have actually not been to the banquet that they hold, but everybody that I've talked to has said it's extremely well done. They hold it over a weekend. You know, they have some pretty big names. I think Tom Verducci is being honored there from Sports Illustrated. Adrian Wojnarowski, I think, is there this year again. I know he's been there in the past. So, you know, it's a great networking opportunity, and, you know, just to get together and kind of talk shop and, you know, just have fun.
Yeah, but come on. Now, you know this. Adrian Wojnarowski, when he's being interviewed, he's saying Doug Haller's going to be there. Come on. I mean, this is the way it goes. This is now, who, in all seriousness, who do you want to meet when you're back there that's in the industry?
That's a great question. Adrian, when I – and it's funny because Adrian's just a little bit older than I am. But when I was just coming up, I was working in Florida. He was working. He was a columnist in New Jersey, and he wrote a column on when the Yankees signed Roger Clemens, and he just had tremendous detail, Brad, in this column about him getting out of the car with the Yankees officials at the time. I'm like, how did he? Because I knew it wasn't him. Like, how did he get there? So I emailed him and asked him, like, how did you get these details? And he was nice, and he wrote back and pretty much took me through the entire column of how he got these great details, even though he was not there at the time. So, you know, we haven't talked in a while, but, you know, when he was, I remember covering the Suns, and he had written a book on St. Anthony, the school that Bobby Hurley went to, yep, and his dad coached at. He had just written that, and I told him that, hey, I saw he had a book out, and he gave me a copy there in his bag, and he signed and gave it to me. So it would be nice to catch up with him. And of course, I love baseball. I'm kind of a baseball nerd. So any, like, Tom Verducci would be great to talk with just about the game, particularly the history of the game. Now it's a little bit different than what it was back, you know, along when I was growing up. So I would just love to talk shop with somebody like that.
We're talking with Doug Haller. He has been selected into the National Sports Media Association 2020 Hall of Fame class. He is now a Hall of Famer. We had Paula on. We used to refer to her as the Hall of Famer. Now we just call her the professor.
You could call Paula just about, I mean,
I know,
with the College Football Playoff Committee. I mean, right, she's probably the most important person that we know.
Right. Now I call her sick. That's all that I call her. And hopefully she gets better. Why do you think you're going in?
That's a hard question to answer. The only thing I do is, and it's kind of what we do at The Athletic, is to try to find different stories to tell. And it's easy. It sounds like, well, that sounds simple enough. It's not always easy. If you're at a game, particularly a basketball team that kind of has the same storyline every game, and they can't shoot, and you've written that five times already, what do you do this time? Just trying to find a different angle, something that maybe the reader A hasn't thought about, something that you know, they can't find anywhere else. I think I've done a fairly decent job with that. And I think I did have, you know, the stories I'm most proud of over the last year was the story is the one I wrote about Pat Tillman. I don't know if you saw it, but it was about his light tower climbing days when he was at ASU. And when I set out to write that story, I knew it was the 15th anniversary is the wrong word, but it had been 15 years since Pat had died, and I wanted to write something on him. I didn't know what, because, you know, this is a guy that has had books written about him, documentaries made about him. Mm-hmm. There's so much about him that's already out there, so I didn't know what to do. And I just came back to that photo of him sitting in the light tower, and I, you know, did a pretty extensive archive search about that. And it was mentioned in every obituary of Pat Tillman that he liked to go up there. But no one had ever written about how he went up there, how often he went up there. And the more I started to look into it, I'm like, well, he had to do this at night, you know, that, which meant he had to get into the stadium somehow, which meant he probably had to break in. And that just kind of, you know, provided a little window of, you know, just something that I could explore and report. And that's probably the story that I've done in my career here in Arizona that I've probably gotten the most satisfaction from.
Not hiking with Bobby Hurley?
That was fun too, and that was a thing where I just kind of texted Bobby out of the blue one summer and said, "Hey, I know you like you talk a lot about how you like the state and you like Arizona and you're happy here." And I knew that he had hiked, so I just said, "Hey, would you mind if I go with you sometime?" Mm-hmm. And to my surprise, he said, "Sure." And you know, I was thinking, Brad, that this was going to be 30 minutes. I think we were out there for 2 hours, for 2 hours, which I should have realized, given that it's Bobby Hurley and that he does nothing, you know, as far as physical activity in 30 minutes, that he's going to, you know, stretch himself to the limits.
Doug Haller is going to the 2020 Hall of Fame class at the National Sports Media Association. Of course, he writes for The Athletic. He covers all things around Arizona State and college sports. You mentioned earlier about having a deal where you're writing about the same thing over and over and over, and you look for different angles. Okay, what's a different angle in Arizona State basketball? Because as I watch them this season, if Remy doesn't play well, if Edwards doesn't shoot well, they're not winning. So that's where I see them here as they get ready for U of A this Saturday night. I guess I'm more interested in seeing Nico Mannion make his only appearance as a college player in Tempe, but that's just me. Help me out here with what you see out of ASU and the game Saturday.
Well, to start, it's we just saw this game what was it, 5 or 6 weeks ago, yep. and to have it turn around and have another rivalry game, it seems very odd. It is odd. You know, we haven't had really any storylines develop on the ASU side, except for, as you mentioned, you know, if Rob Edwards can shoot well, or if they can get a third scorer, then they might have a chance. They might be, you know, they might be a tough team to beat, but we just haven't seen that enough to really count on that. So, you know, I think from the Arizona side, it's can they win on the road? They haven't won a true road game yet. And a lot of that is kind of common for a team that relies on freshmen the way they do. But at the same time, you know, Arizona is built, you know, they have a supporting cast of veterans, of graduate transfers from Stone Gettings to Max Hazard to, you know, Chase Jeter wasn't a graduate transfer, but he's certainly been around. Dylan Smith is a transfer. He's been around. So can they finally play on the road? And, you know, Arizona State, it's just, you know, they're kind of fortunate in that they're, you know, 11-7. Their metrics, none of them point to the NCAA tournament, but they still have a couple opportunities in the Pac-12. You know, that a couple of wins, maybe Arizona, it has to be start Saturday against Arizona and then later against Oregon, that if they can win those two, you know, and get put together some consistency, then maybe they could, you know, put themselves on the bubble and, you know, give the selection committee something to think about come March. Will that happen? There's nothing to suggest that it will. They haven't had that kind of consistency, but, you know, I think that's the big storylines for each team. Can Arizona win on the road, and can Arizona State finally, you know, find any sort of consistency?
I think watching the three freshmen for U of A, it's a lot of fun. It's, will they be able to come together by the time that they get to the Pac-12 tournament? Because the timing is so odd, what these two teams met, what was it, 3 weeks ago, as you alluded to, right before the first of the year. And I feel like there's not really been a whole lot that's changed. We're in that mid part of the first half of the season. We really don't know still what these two teams are going to look like come March. But these three freshmen, they are special when they get it going.
They are, and they all bring something different. It's too bad, because we judge college basketball players in general, not just freshmen, but really everybody, on not who they are in the moment, but what they will become in the NBA. And, you know, all three of those guys are projected to be first-round draft picks. What kind of NBA players they'll be, I don't know if you could say for sure at this point. I think they're 3 or 4 years away from their best basketball, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But will they get to a level this year that enables Arizona to make a run in March? I think that's the big question. Are they just going to be good freshmen? Or by the time, you know, they reach the NCAA tournament, will they be good college basketball players? Because the way college basketball is this year, it's not a good year. There are no good teams. You know, Baylor's your number one team in the nation. They've proven it. They've beaten some good teams. They deserve that. But are they invincible? Not at all.
No.
So, you know, Arizona could be a team that, if they can get everything going, and you know, and that includes some support from their veterans, and we saw that from Max Hazard these last couple games, then if they get into the NCAA tournament, no matter what seed they have, you know, they can play with just about anybody there. I mean, they've proven that. They played well for the most part at Baylor. They played well against Gonzaga. It's just a matter of where they can, you know, how much they can improve from now until the end of February.
Doug Haller from The Athletic with us. Let's switch gears. Were you surprised that Todd Graham got back into the coaching game with the Hawaii job?
I'm surprised it's taken this long. And I understand it's really interesting. I have heard from various times, as I'm sure you have, that whether it was the Kansas job, the Colorado State job, the UNLV job, that they've all heard that, you know, he made a run at, that, you know, that he was trying to, you know, assemble his staff kind of under the scene, behind the scenes, not for all of them. But I did hear that from one job in particular, and it didn't work out for him. I do understand that, you know, Todd, it didn't end well at ASU for Todd. The defense, and he's a defensive coach, and whenever you're a defensive coach and your team is putting up numbers that rank historically among the worst the school has ever produced, mm-hmm. That's not a good look. The players have said some things that was not favorable toward Todd, just about how demanding he was. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when Todd took over the program, he needed to, you know, set some boundaries. He needed to bring discipline to that locker room, because it was not good. I mean, everyone knows that Dennis Erickson's teams, even on the field, were not disciplined. So he did that, and he got the academics in order, you know, and he did have a couple of good seasons. So I thought somewhere that would be enough to get him a job. But, you know, and I don't know how selective he was. I had a conversation with him maybe within the year that they made the coaching change, and he wasn't interested in being a coordinator anywhere. He wanted to be a head coach. So maybe he had opportunities to do that, and he turned it down. But I was surprised that he didn't land somewhere, that it took this long for him to get back into the business.
My understanding, even as of about 6 to 8 weeks ago, he was on the speaking circuit and was speaking to men's groups, Bible studies, and was intimating he was looking at becoming involved in the ministry down in Texas. Yes, he still was looking at jobs on the college end. I guess my view of him, he's very polarizing. I'm sure you've found this, that there's this part of Arizona State fan base that has not moved on from Ray hiring Herm, and that Todd should still be here. I don't believe in that side at all. I think they're misguided. My bone with Todd was, as you said, the undisciplined part of how the team wouldn't be able to stop a team defensively. You know, the defense on him is, well, look at how they were penalized. They were one of the least penalized teams. It doesn't mean anything. They still would get penalties at inopportune times. They wouldn't get a lot of them, but they couldn't tackle. They were not good defensively throughout his run here, in my opinion. And he completely missed, whiffed, didn't get it done when it came to local recruiting. The high schools were not interested. Mike Norvell is the guy that got N'Keal Harry and Chase Lucas and Bryce Perkins. It wasn't Todd Graham. And anybody that's been around the Chandler program knows that to be the case. So I felt like it was time for him to go. I'm happy he's back doing it. I'm surprised he didn't go into fundraising because, to his credit, he did do a lot around the stadium. ASU actually abused him, in my opinion, when they point out he spoke over 120 times to fundraisers. You can't do that. You got to be here to coach. So I'm just kind of giving my little rant on the whole deal. I'm happy that he's back. He'll be in Hawaii for a few years, and then he'll bounce back out here. That's how I see it.
That's interesting about the ministry part. I have not heard that. I do know that when I did talk to him, we had lunch one day. He did bring up God a lot during that conversation. Mm-hmm. I had not heard that he was going to go down that path. And you're right about the recruiting. Even though, you know, I really think he lost his job the year before when they went to Arizona and lost 55-621, whatever it was. I really think he lost his job there.
Yep.
You know, and then Michael Crow and Ray, you know, were very, you know, outspoken publicly saying that, you know, we need to see improvement this year, which was kind of rare. And I think Todd probably saw the writing on the wall when that happened. When you have your school president and athletic director talk publicly and say those things, it's not a good sign. You know, they did show they improved to 7-5. They finished second in the Pac-12. At the same time, if you do look at the recruiting, especially what they had done, not only, as you mentioned, locally, but what they had not done in California, I think, you know, that might have been, I don't want to say a mirage, but, you know, the future did not look great at that point based on what they had coming in. So, you know, I do know that there's still a lot of, as you mentioned, a lot of Todd Graham support. I hear from them just about every week in some form.
Yep.
But I do think that the program's in a better place now.
Two other quick questions. We've got about three minutes left, 4 minutes in the segment. So let's just bounce through these. The arena. Bobby Hurley, is his future tied to getting the arena? My understanding is getting an arena looks bleak right now. That's my term, talking with people, that they're not making progress. Are the two tied together, keeping Bobby here?
Are they tied? That's a great question. As far as the arena goes, you know, it's been kind of, it's on the back burner. Right now, ASU is, first priority is to get the hockey/multi-purpose arena finished. And then once that's done, which best case scenario is probably late 2022, then they'll say, okay, now what are our options with Desert Financial Arena? I've talked with Bobby, you know, and kind of filled him out privately, not privately, but just talking, you know, asked him about that. He doesn't, at least to me, he doesn't come out and say, you know, we need this. I know, obviously they do, but I do know that in recruiting, you know, it's a significant hurdle. You know, when you have an arena and you have top recruits on campus that, you know, you're a little bit reluctant, you know, to take them over to show them your main facility.
Yep.
That's a problem. That is a problem. The bad thing for ASU is that, you know, as bad as Desert Financial Arena is, and you can make an argument it's the worst in the Pac-12, it's still, you know, there's no structural issues with it. You know, it's still, for the most part, a decent arena, you know, just as far as the building goes. But, you know, the video board is, you know, probably the worst in the conference. And, you know, it's not helping them. It's definitely a subtraction when you put everything on paper as far as recruiting goes. I've never heard privately Bobby may say that might be, you know, the one thing that he has on his list of saying whether or not I'll stay here. But I've never heard him say that.
Okay, last question then. Herm, I'm of the mindset of you can talk all day long about five stars and four stars, and I loved Herm. Were you at the football banquet? Just for a quick question.
I was out of town that night.
Okay, so the football banquet, I'm sitting at Herm's table. One of the sponsors of ours said, you know, we're sitting at his table. Sit with Herm and his wife. It's great. They do the highlight video, you know, the whole season, how great the season was and all that stuff, and the music's blasting and play-by-play and big scores. I lean over to my wife. I said, it's going to be interesting to see the edit job when they lose four in a row. So they get to the Washington State game, and the Sun Devils win, and the next thing you hear is, Oregon in town tonight. And so they just pretended the 4 weeks never happened. So Herm gets up. Herm gets up to speak. Great video. And we ran off the ditch during the season. We had four flat tires. The train was off the tracks. It's just crushing the fact that people did not want to admit that they lost four in a row. So it could have gone either way. I understand that. I like him personally. Who doesn't like Herm personally? I think all this stuff about look at how great we are with all these stars is nothing more than marketing, PR, hype, some of it from people in our industry that just need to understand, are you really there to report? Are you there just to get a click because you got a five-star kid's name up there? I mean, where are you at on all this off-season hype for a team that went to the Sun Bowl again?
Well, the four-game losing streak, obviously the season went off the rails again. I think they did a good job of kind of figuring it out, and you win your last three, one's over Oregon, one's over your rival, and then a bowl game. And even though that bowl game really didn't mean anything, I mean, both teams were shorthanded. You know, ASU and really both teams with an early signing period, you're kind of already shifted gears to the next season to try to get your roster put together. The only thing I could say about that bowl game, though, is it does set expectations it kind of starts the narrative for the next season. ASU wins that, so what happens? They're getting top 25 recognition now preseason. Not that that means anything, but it kind of carries you through the off season. The signing day stuff, now, without question, on paper, when you look at the rankings, the stars and all that, it's a good recruiting class. The biggest problem I've had, Brad, is, you know, and it's not really a problem, but, you know, there is a lot of, you know, cheerleading for stuff that we just don't know. We don't know.
Right.
We've seen four stars come through this program before. Jason Lewis, the running back from Virginia Beach, being one where everyone gets really, really excited, and then the kid, you know, doesn't play, ends up transferring. In some ways, I don't think that's fair to the kid because things that he can't control or that are out of his control, they blow up, and then all of a sudden he's a disappointment. So, you know, I just think I understand the excitement around recruiting rankings and all that, but I just think people should, you know, remember to pump the brakes that, you know, it's just, you know, signing day comes, signing day goes, and then, you know, reality hits. And sometimes these kids do well, sometimes they don't. Now, in ASU's case, when you do have eight or nine, the more four-star kids that you have, the better your chances that they're going to pay off and
sure,
they're going to be really difference makers for you. So I think that in ASU's case, that is obviously a positive. And like I said, there's no question that with the job Antonio Pierce has done and also Herm being a closer, that they are recruiting better than they have since during my time on the beat.
Yeah. No, it's fair on all fronts. You know, I would like to see them be able to land a quarterback. I understand Jaden is sitting there, and we're in this day where Daddy Baller doesn't want to send his son to sit behind Jaden. But it takes one hit to the knee with Jaden, and right now they'd be in a world of hurt. That's the world we're in right now in college football.
Yeah, well, they should be you know, they check a lot of boxes. They return eight starters on defense, and their defense played pretty well last year. And then they have a difference maker at quarterback. You know, the big thing is they had the worst offensive line in the Pac-12 last year, and they lose three guys off that. How are they going to patch that together? Because, you know, if they don't have a good offensive line, then obviously their ceiling is limited.
I could go on and on with you because it's fun to talk to you about so many things and you're so insightful. Congratulations on the award and appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
Brad, I appreciate you having me.
Here's Doug Howler with us. He is a Hall of Famer. That's right. Good for him. Congratulations on that front from The Athletic. And check out all of his content over on The Athletic. Devin Henry is our chairman of the board. That means that he is doing everything and he didn't screw up today. Eric Sorensen is our senior executive vice president of everything or nothing, and he didn't screw up today. I was all right. I got through it today. Did my thing. Appreciate you being on board. Appreciate all of our partners. We are self-funded. That means when you see these commercials you're about to see, these people believe in what we do day in and day out. Our website has plenty of content at sports360az.com. Have a great day.